Hello and welcome to this week's Opening Bell. I'm boxing news editor Tris Dixon, joined by Danny Flexton for a change this week. Where's Matt?
Where is Matt? Matt's in Brighton, I believe.
Yeah, Matt with some well-deserved time off. Danny, you're getting comfortable now in the podcast chair. How does it feel after the feedback last week?
Yeah, apart from one guy on Twitter who seemed to be thirsty for your return, particularly because I wasn't so good. Apart from him, I think it went down pretty well.
Okay, that's good. I've got to say, I listened to it while I was away, sunning myself, and I thought it was good. Enjoyed it.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah, I thought Matt was really good.
Yeah, so did I. Someone's got to be the straight man.
But talking to Matt, he was up in Liverpool last week, and he saw all kinds of thrills and spills, and
that was after the fight.
And what was what really could be seen as a sad ending, really, in terms of how things panned out for David Price. Were you surprised by the result of Thompson Price too?
I was a bit surprised. Yeah, I think going into the fight, I felt Price would get his revenge. I mean, it wasn't a massive shock because obviously Thompson stopped him in the first fight, so it was always a possibility. But yeah, I was surprised how quickly he ran out of gas. I was surprised more by the manner of his defeat than the fact that he lost.
I think it was a more crushing defeat than the first one, don't you think?
Well, seeing as he'd apparently put all the wrongs right for this fight, he'd got Lennox Lewis in helping him with his training. Apparently his conditioning was a lot better because he'd maybe overlooked Thompson a little bit the first time. So from what he'd said, he'd left no stone unturned, and yet the result was more or less the same.
But with regards to the involvement of Lennox Lewis, do you think Lennox could have been in camp a little bit longer? Lennox has said that he only had 3 weeks when he could have had, I think, 8 or 9, what he would have preferred. I mean, and then on the night, Lennox was animated and making a lot of noise, seemingly, at ringside. I mean, too many voices in the corner, too much disruption, not one cohesive unit. I mean, is that what you're reading into it?
Maybe, yeah. I mean, the fact is that Lennox Lewis would have liked him to have had more time with him in camp, but Price did train for 10 weeks. He just didn't train for 10 weeks with Lewis. What would have happened to Franny Smith and his input if he'd have spent all that time with Lewis? Would he have been marginalised? You know, has he not got anything to offer suddenly, even though he's taken Price through all his unbeaten fights right up until Thompson? So it's difficult. You know, I've seen Price up there training in Liverpool with Franny Smith. He certainly doesn't slack off. So, you know, I'm sure there's stuff Lewis can teach him, but whether Lewis is ready to be a full-time trainer, I'm not sure.
Talk of Price being too anxious, using up a lot of mental energy, particularly, I think, after the second round when he couldn't get rid of Tony Thompson despite having him on the deck with a big right hand. That can play a part, can it, when you talk about the fatigue and early, and particularly, you know, when Price has hit people, they've stayed hit in the past. You think of the swathy cut through after McDermott, Sexton and Audley Harrison, those guys, none of them were coming back for any more by the time the final bell came. Tony Thompson did come back for more. I mean, that can make a big guy like David Price question himself if he can't put him away with a really good shot.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I also think Price must have felt at that point when Thompson did get back up that he was struggling himself. You know, he'd really tried to get him out of there just after the knockdown. I think he realised, you know, actually, no, the knockdown was just before the end of the round, but he tried to get him out of there before that, so he was already tiring himself, and I think that must have played into his mind. He must have thought, if I'm not going to get him out of here now, I could be in for a long, hard night. Thompson's an experienced fighter as well. You know, look how long he lasted with Vladimir Klitschko. So it was always going to be hard to see him going down from one punch and not getting up, as hard as Price hits.
The last thing a tiring fighter wants is to be nailed repeatedly to the body. And that happened a lot in round 4, didn't it, for David Price, when Tony Thompson, the veteran that he is, switched downstairs and landed some really thudding shots into Price's body. I mean, if you've got self-doubt, that's the last thing you need, isn't it?
Well, yeah. I mean, Price has always been very upright. It's difficult to be anything else, I guess, when you're tall and lean like he is. But yeah, body, you know, elongated torso is always going to be an inviting target, especially for a crafty operator like Thompson. Yeah, but from a confidence perspective, once you start to feel yourself going, it kind of multiplies your tiredness, I guess.
Yeah, and I think Price really, from the outside looking in, it looked like he was unravelling on the telly in the fourth round, and the fifth round was a matter of I's being dotted and T's being crossed as the formalities were sort of played out in front of us.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the fifth especially, every shot that hit him cleanly, he seemed to be fragile, he seemed to be wobbling around a little bit. It did just seem like we were waiting for the inevitable to happen, as sad as it is to say.
Now, you and I have both had a lot of dealings with Frank Maloney over the years. It was sad to see Frank's post-fight interview, wasn't it, when he sort of broke down on Box Nation.
Yeah, I mean, obviously he alludes to it in this week's guest column, but it wasn't just about that fight. You know, Frank's had so much trauma over the years. Think on Box Nation, on the night Steve Bunce alluded to some of the things he's been through, what with Darren Sutherland and the heart attack he had at McDermott Fury as well. And recently, you know, from what we've heard, he might have had some personal problems as well. So none of it can be easy, and Frank's not getting any younger. I think, you know, he's obviously very experienced, but the longer you spend in the game, the more stress that must give you.
Yeah, particularly in this game.
Well, yeah.
Now, in this guest column by Frank, I mean, I think it's an outstanding column. I think it's very honest, as you'd expect from Frank, but almost honest to a fault. What were your emotions reading it?
I felt sad for him. You know, I've known Frank, as you say, for a long time, and we've had our run-ins, but I've never had anything less than full respect for him. You know, he's paid his dues, and he always really feels for his fighters as well. You know, he's not a promoter who's just looking out to make a quick buck. I'm not naming any names of anyone who are, but, you know, he always really cares for his fighters, and Price was kind of like his last big hero that he was hoping to make into a champion. And if Price now quits, which isn't looking likely to be fair, but if he does, then Maloney will quit with him. He said that.
Well, yeah, Maloney also doesn't seem very sure in his own position with Price. I think that's clear from the column, whether Price continues with him or without him. Like you say, though, for Frank, it's probably stress that he can do well without. But yeah, I think it's a really good column. I definitely think it's worth the cost of a Boxing News on its own. I think it's great stuff from Frank, who, by the way, told us that his interview with us for this guest column will be the last that he speaks about this matter. So really interesting stuff there. It was an action-packed night in Liverpool. Now, you and I have talked about the merits of Kevin Satchel in the past, who's looked very impressive, beating Chris and Paul Edwards and basically on his rise to titles. However, he so nearly came unstuck against Ian Butcher in what would have been an unlikely upset. Satchel now has been wobbled and come back and won, although some people ringside, or certainly watched it on TV and on Twitter, thought Butcher deserved it. Whichever way you look at it, it was close. Satchel, questions answered or question marks?
Maybe a bit of both. I mean, maybe we were guilty of overrating Satchel a little bit based on the impressive performances he's put in. He's obviously a very talented fighter, but he hasn't had that many fights. You know, you can get to a title in those lower weight classes so quickly now because of the dearth of people competing in those divisions. So, you know, maybe he needs these experiences, these 12-round fights as well, instead of stopping opponents to really prove what he's all about and to get that experience before he moves on to the next level.
Yeah, I think there's some exciting times up at Liverpool, though. Again, I mean, we seem to say it sort of every year, but now with Paul Smith having just beaten Tony Dodson in a thriller that I finally caught up with last night, I thought round three of that was exceptional, by the way. I really enjoyed that. Obviously, Satchel, we've got Paul Butler, who's up there, who's someone that you're planning on speaking to, hopefully in the next few weeks for a BM feature. And obviously, it's going to be fascinating to see where Biggin goes from here, isn't it? I mean, David Price, I mean, it's not the mother of all rebuilding jobs, but it's a big job on David's hands and the hands of his handlers, trainers and managers, anyone involved with David Price. It's a big job, isn't it?
Well, yeah. And David, as you've talked about the Liverpool scene coming back once again, David's got a lot of responsibility in that regard because someone's got to headline these bills. You know, Paul Smith's a massive ticket seller, but he's with a particular promoter. You know, David Price, if he turned it in or if he rebuilt a much lower level, it might be hard for Maloney to put on these, you know, stacked bills in Liverpool with the likes of Satchel and so on. You know, so he is kind of responsible for that. And maybe that weighed on Price a little bit, that he was kind of the figurehead of this Liverpool resurgence. Maybe would have been easier for him to just build up on undercards a bit more.
Yeah, I've got to say, it's quite unusual the amount of times that I've heard people now say since Saturday night that Price was beaten badly in front of his friends and family. I mean, that happens to a lot of people, doesn't it? But people seem to be singling out him, but maybe that's in line with what you're alluding to about being, you know, having a whole city behind him.
Well, yeah. I mean, the thing is, Audley Harrison got criticised so much between being the main event and all his fights coming up. And obviously, Price has graduated to that level as he's become a champion. But he's still become a champion very early in his career, which means he's headlining shows on TV and on the night, you know, at the venue very early on in his professional career, which can't be easy. It's a lot of added pressure on his shoulders. And I think Price, you know, he's quite a down-to-earth guy. I don't think he's especially susceptible to pressure. But that would be enough for anyone, surely.
I think the way forward for Price now has got to be to rebuild at domestic level, hasn't it?
Very much so, yeah. I mean, I'm not sure which fights I pick out for him. Heavyweight division, it's very hard to find a non-puncher, isn't it? Which is kind of what you'd want for his next couple of fights, just to be sure and to rebuild his confidence.
You certainly wouldn't. I mean, obviously a lot depend on what happens with Chisora against Malik Scott later in the month, but there had been talk of Price Chisora. It's not a fight you'd be rushing to make if you were Price's manager now, is it?
No, certainly not. I think someone on a forum either yesterday or today mentioned maybe Michael Sprott.
Towers, maybe.
Richard Towers is another one, although Richard Towers can really punch. Now, Price should be so much better from a technical perspective, but if I was Price's manager, I wouldn't want to put him in with anyone who can punch, particularly concussively, for the next couple of fights.
Mind you, look what Sprott did to Wardley.
True, but that was more of an aberration. You know, Sprott's not known for doing that on a regular basis by any means.
No, okay, fair enough. But, I mean, in terms of timescales, I mean, you think, I'd like to see David back quickly, but it could be one of those losses where he's going to have to go back, restructure the team, look at things from the ground up. That could take a good 6 months. I mean, feasibly, this could have set back a 30-year-old 18 months, couldn't it?
Well, yeah, it could, but that might not be the worst thing. I mean, in the heavyweight division, they tend to mature in their mid-30s anyway, so I think he's got time on his side. He's still the British and Commonwealth champion. I mean, that's a concern in itself, because obviously if he doesn't defend the belt within a certain amount of time, he could be stripped. So he needs to consider that. But I'm not sure if he's got a mandatory coming up, because I'm sure there's some voluntaries out there that would work for him as well.
Yeah, I think, you know, when you look at devastating defeats, I was ringside when Khan was crushed by Bradis Prescott. And I mean, Frank Warren did a tremendous job to bring him back from that. I think two or three fights later, he was world champion, and he beat Marco Antonio Barrera into the bargain. I mean, it would take a couple of master strokes to get Price up quickly to where he was a couple of weeks ago.
That's exactly what they were at the time, master strokes. You know, Barrera was just the wrong side of the hill, perfect opponent, still world rated at the time. You know, and Kotelnik was the perfect champion, not a big puncher, quite limited technically, but comes all night, you know, plays into Khan's hands. They were as good examples of matchmaking as the Prescott one was of bad matchmaking.
So, yeah.
You know, Price, if he can have the benefit of matchmaking of that standard, that calibre, then he's got a good chance of coming back. But the next opponent is vital, the next performance is vital.
Yeah, I'd have to agree. And then back in the mix, we have Felix Sturm, who is now the IBF mandatory challenger. It was a routine win in retrospect against Predrag Redisevic. easy for me to say. But Sturm, I mean, having lost to Sam Solomon, albeit someone who, you know, a decision was turned into no contest when Solomon failed a drugs test afterwards, Sturm still a real contender, isn't he? If not one of the top two or three any longer.
Yeah, I mean, he's not been beaten out of sight in any of the recent fights he's lost. You know, Solomon, obviously, there was a cloud hanging over it and it was rightly changed from no contest. But even against Daniel Gill, the fight could have gone either way at the end. You know, every fight Sturm's had has been close in his last five. So, you know, he's done well to beat Radosevic, if that's the right way of saying it. I've no idea. he's done well to do that, but it was an opponent who'd fought at a much lower level, so I'm not sure that's proved too much. We're going to have to see him in again with someone of the kind of Gill level, Macklin.
I think one thing when you look at Sturm is you think he had a tough fight with Macklin, a tough fight with Martin Murray, and people think the way that I see things sometimes is that now Murray and Macklin have got more miles on the clock, so they had hard fights. But don't forget, Sturm's are consistent in that. Sturm's had a lot of hard fights now himself, and he's been around the block since he fought De La Hoya, you know, getting on for a decade ago. Mm. So he's had a lot of tough, hard fights, and Sturm is one of those guys who's a pro's pro. He's always in great shape. If you ever go on YouTube and look up Felix Sturm training, there's some great training videos of him there. He's always in fantastic nick, but sometimes your body starts to creak a little bit under you, and if you live the life, I mean, people talk about Baron Hopkins going on into his late 40s, which is obviously rather freakish, but sometimes your body just slows down and gives up on you because you've driven it into the ground, and I think Sturm might have done that.
Yeah, I mean, one of the benefits Sturm has is that he promotes himself and he seems to have a bit of money in that business, so he's able to bring opponents over to him. Yeah. You know, this was an IBF mandated eliminator, but there was never any question of Sturm going away to Serbia or Montenegro. You know, that was never going to happen. So he gets these fights in his stronghold, and that can't be a bad thing when you're coming towards the end of your career if you are slowing down a bit.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, Sturm has been very clever in that respect. He's called a lot of his shots, and he's obviously got a lot going for him when he brings the guys over to Germany.
Yeah, very much so.
So big night in Hull this weekend.
don't hear that very often.
What's top of the bill for you?
Top of the bill for me is Brooke Jones, because I watched the first fight and thought it was enthralling. You know, for the first six rounds, or maybe five rounds, it was just an exhibition of great, you know, timing and accuracy and power from Brooke. But then it just turned into a complete war as Brooke started to tire, and you know, it was a real blood and guts thriller. And he'd shown his technical expertise early on, and then he was forced to show his heart at the end, which, you know, you'll be hoping he doesn't have to this time.
What do you think was up with Kell Brook that night? Because, like you said, for six rounds, we saw the Kell Brook we've expected to see for the last couple of years, and then the wheels came off.
Well, yeah, I mean, from what he said, it was a problem making the weight, and he's since brought in a nutritionist to make sure he does it properly. And you know, the training team have thought about it long and hard, and they seem to have him on a plan that he can now stick to. The only thing I would say as well is that this fight's been made at 152 pounds, which is £5 over the first fight. So will that play a role? You know, Eddie Hearn says that 150 is standard for a non-title fight anyway. The extra couple were just due to Kell having a minor foot injury and the recovery taking a bit longer. So we'll see if that makes a difference.
Makes you wonder how tight it will be if he does go back down to welterweight and fights for honours, doesn't it?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, 152, you can say it's a non-title fight, but even in non-title fights, I've seen people come in only a pound or two over because they know that their next fight is going to be at the limit. So they want to stay as close to it as possible.
Walk in the park for Kell Brook this time?
It's so hard to say. I think Kell Brook will be, you know, will put on a better performance, but I think it also depends what Carson Jones turns up.
We've seen the best and worst of him in this country, haven't we?
Yeah, I mean, against Dean Byrne, it was like a different fight. It was like they brought a ringer over. So, yeah, I mean, hopefully we get to see the one who pushed Kell so hard the first time. And then, you know, if Kell does well, he gets a lot of credit for it. But if we get the Dean Byrne version of Carson Jones, Brook won't get the credit he deserves.
No, I see standard odds for Brook. The average really is with him a 1-4 on favourite, with Carson Jones 17-4 underdog. So sort of 4-1 really for Carson Jones. I probably have him a fraction longer than that, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think people forget because of how Brook collapsed over the second half of the fight. It seems more like a loss than a win. I think people forget that Brook actually won that fight, and deservedly so. So, yeah, I mean, I think the odds should be a bit longer, but I think they can get away with it because everyone's come out of it with such negative feelings from the first fight.
Yeah. You got 4-1 with William Hill for Carson Jones. Interestingly, Matt and I often joke about this, but price is on a draw or anything from what looks to be 22-1 from Coral to 38-1 with B Win. You know, if you fancy a flutter on a draw, 38-1 is not bad going, is it?
I wonder if you put like a pound on a draw in every big fight of a year, you'd actually make a profit at the end of the year just from a couple of draws. You probably would.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you did that with the Matchroom show earlier in the year, you'd probably be pretty minted. But one of the fights I'm really looking forward to, and obviously because it's on the same bill as Brooke Jones and because it's on the same bill that Luke Campbell, the Olympian, makes his debut on, it's gone slightly under the radar. I'm really looking forward to seeing Derry Matthews against Tommy Coyle.
Yeah, I mean, it's another great lightweight fight, and we've seen quite a lot of those recently with Crawler and Reese and so on. Yeah, I mean, a bit of argy-bargy going on at the press conference, as you can see in the picture there in the magazine. It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's Derry's kind of experience, isn't it, against the youth and vitality of Coyle.
And, I mean, just to pick out some names in the undercard, which we can see, Anthony Ogogo, nice bit of exposure for him on the whole bill. And obviously it's about Luke Campbell, isn't it? It's his homecoming after the Olympics. Big pressure, though, to realistically headline a stadium show in your Olympic debut.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly the headliner in terms of the live gate. Maybe not so much on TV, they'll probably play more on Brook. But, yeah, I mean, Campbell, it is a lot of pressure on his shoulders, but you'd imagine he's been matched relatively comfortably, considering. And that, you know, he might not need quite as much of an apprenticeship as a less experienced amateur. We are talking about Olympic gold medalist here.
European champ, yeah, definitely. And the return of the troll hunter, Curtis Woodhouse, back in business. Looking forward to seeing him?
Yeah, definitely. He's always in exciting fights. You know, you have to admire his story, the fact that he's come from a well-paid sport where he could have stayed there, earned more money from that even in the lower leagues than he probably earns from boxing now. But he had that desire to switch to boxing and to really make it. And, you know, he's had an English title. Next stage for him, hopefully, at some point, will be a British title.
And I tell you what, the better Frankie Gavin seemingly gets, the more credit Curtis Woodhouse will get for pushing him so hard a few fights ago.
Yeah, I mean, I think the times Woodhouse has actually slipped up. Obviously, Gavin was just a superior operator, but the times he's slipped up, I think he's fought the wrong fight sometimes. I think that's something he can correct. I think there's still improvement in him, even though he's not the youngest, because he switched so late on. There's still a lot of improvement to come.
Yeah, okay, and without a big mileage too.
Well, yeah.
I think the main event on the Box Nation show, that whole show's on Sky Sports, the Box Nation bill, which includes an appearance from Prince Aaron, is interesting. There's a lot of money on the line when Denis Gratchev fights Edwin Rodriguez. You've spoken to Edwin, haven't you, in the build-up. How do you see this one going?
It's crazy, isn't it, that you can earn $600,000 from one fight. And, you know, Gratchev and Rodriguez, all due respect to them, aren't world champions. So there must be world champions out there who don't make that money.
Quite a lot of them.
And they must be so jealous. In terms of the fight itself, I think Rodriguez was a world-class amateur. And, you know, he's adapted as a pro. He's come along slowly, but he seems to be peaking about now. Gratchev, we've seen against Boutte and in his semi-final against Zolt Erdai. It's very game, very strong. Has he got enough of a skill set? Is he versatile enough to beat Rodriguez? I mean, I would favour Rodriguez.
Just going back, I've just seen the odds. Derry Matthews evens against Tommy Coyle. Tommy Coyle, a slight outsider at 5-4, shows that that fight is one that could go either way, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, very much so. But I think I'd probably lump on Matthews if he's at evens, to be honest. Yeah. If I was a betting man, which I'm not.
Not much.
Yeah, maybe a little bit.
Okay, and just back to Rodriguez, Gratchev. Gratchev, a 2-1 underdog.
See, I mean, that's someone who's beat Zolt Erdai and pushed Lucien Boutte. It seems wired, you know, it seems attractive. I wouldn't bet on it simply because I think Rodriguez will win. But if you fancy Gratchev, it's definitely got some value there.
It's going to be a good fight, though, isn't it? I reckon it will be a good fight. Styles and stuff. I mean, Rodriguez isn't that much better than Gratchev that he's not going to get dragged into a fight at some stage.
No, no. And he's not a massive puncher, Rodriguez, either. So in terms of keeping him off, that'll only work for so long. So, yeah, I think we can expect fireworks.
Okay, just in closing, we've got some fun and games coming tomorrow, haven't we?
Fun and games?
We're going to the Hay Fury press conference.
Yes.
I mean, what's it going to be like seeing Fury and Hay finally come face to face?
It'll be a relief, I think, because we've all wanted the fight to be signed for, 3 weeks now. And it's a huge fight for boxing, as we've both alluded to in the last couple of weeks in the magazine. It's a fight boxing needs, I think. Hopefully it doesn't bring the game into disrepute if anything gets out of hand. But it'll attract a lot of casual followers, which I think is great for the sport. And yeah, so it's just a relief to see them actually sign on the dotted line and get the first press conference underway.
Where do you think the value for money comes in a fight like this? Does it come in the pre-fight hype or what happens inside the ropes?
Both, I think. It kind of takes you on a journey all the way through, like the way Hey Chisora did, I suppose. That started in Munich. You know, not in the way we would have liked, I guess, but it did help build that fight. And it went all the way through. I don't think people subscribe to Box Nation simply for the 5 rounds the fight lasted on the night. I think a lot of it was the build-up and the anticipation.
Yeah. And I think what's interesting is something that I think I've mentioned on my podcast before is when I was speaking to Elliot Wurzel, who's David Hay's biographer, as you know. Elliot made this really valid point, and it was at the Frotch-Kessler fight. Is the week leading up to Frotch-Kessler, people thought and hoped they were going to have a good fight, and it was about two guys who were evenly matched, and, you know, on a collision course, we were going to see fireworks. But where they'd fought before, we knew what we were going to get, and so there wasn't that kind of anticipation around, you know, that sort of X factor when the fireworks go off and all the rest of it. So when Frotch came down to the ring and to welcome to the jungle, the crowd came alive, and then everything sort of happened. But I think when you got fights like Hay and Fury, which is part good fight, and you can justify it because of the world rankings they've got, and because Fury's unbeaten and Hay's been down from a cruiserweight and all the rest of it, and you can justify it as a legitimate fight. Whether you think Fury will get knocked out earlier seems to be a common thought on Twitter, and I'm not saying I go along with that at the minute, but there's part of this fight that, as a boxing fan, and this is forgetting all the politics, putting all that to the side, sometimes, you know, there's a feeling that you get when the fighters are in the ring together before the first bell, and it's almost like a drug. You know, you get that sort of fevered anticipation and excitement as to what's going to happen. Granted, it was like that against for Hay and Audley until the boost started after about 30 seconds. Yeah. But I think this fight will be different. I think because the style, you know, styles makes fights, the old adage. And I just think this one could really kick off.
Yeah. You've got two real combustible elements in Hay and Fury. I don't think there's a bigger fight in terms of personalities, the notoriety, the infamy. I don't think there's a bigger fight you can make in Britain. You know, it's huge, partly because they're heavyweights. It's always going to be an attractive proposition. But just because, you know, they're both so outrageous, they're both so, you know, outspoken, it can't fail to be interesting in the build-up, even if it turns into a damn squib on the night, which we hope it won't.
Who do you think will go into the ring, having won the pre-fight mind games?
I think there's a bit more strategy in Hayes' mind games, if you want to call them that. I think Fury kind of says what's on his mind and has no fear or favour, whereas Hay thinks a lot more...
calculated.
Yeah, so a lot more calculated, I would say, Hay. And he's got people around him that are more calculated as well. I think with, say, Peter Fury, for example, what you see is what you get. He's quite a humble, nice guy. But
yeah.
Adam Booth's a humble, nice guy, but he's always thinking as well about how to get an edge.
Plotting,
yeah.
Okay, all right, that's us in a nutshell for this week. Next week, Matt should be back, but it depends on your feedback and whether Danny stays in the chair.
He goes, you
Yeah. But yeah, we'll be back next week. And as I say, we would have been to the Hay Fury press conference, so we'll bring you the fallout from that. We'll be reviewing the big whole show and looking ahead to a summer of features and good ringside action. In fact, on a closing note, many of you would have read The Dark Trade by Don McRae. I'm very pleased to say that Don, who writes the last feature of each month, his feature at the end of this month is going to be behind the scenes of The Dark Trade, where he's written about how the idea of the book came about, how he went about interviewing the fighters, what the fallout of the book was, and basically everything you wanted to know about that book. So keep your eyes peeled for that at the end of the month. It is a boxing classic. In the meantime, from Danny Flex and myself, thank you very much for joining us this week, and we'll be back soon.
William Hill, sponsors of the Opening Bell podcast. Bet £25 and get a £25 bet free. Bet now with williamhill.com.
Get involved with all the best boxing banter at our forum, and that's forum.boxingnewsonline.net.